This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by the Ready or Not Go-To Guides, created by us, Lou and Loz. Somehow it's 2025, and with that, you might be returning to paid work and starting to think about what that looks like. And that's exactly why we made the Ready or Not Go-To Guides. Tackling breastfeeding and returning to work, postpartum and return to work planning, and childcare 101, our guides are beautiful, easy to read, and filled to the brim with expert information. Take the guesswork out of returning to paid work and use the wisdom that we've learned from over 100 interviews with working mums. Get the guides now for $29 individually or $69 as a trio at readyornot.au. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show by Ready or Not that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work work as two moms. I am Lou.
I'm Loz, kicking things off as always with a good news story. In Australia, starting from July 1 this year, women who adopt or give birth will receive a weekly $113 boost to their superannuation under the newly passed paid parental leave bill. How effing good is that to start? Like, let's just acknowledge
it. So this is part of the paid parental leave program through the government. So you get paid, Matt, during your leave, you will get super paid.
Super. I mean, it always should be paid. Yeah, it is super news. So this $1.1 billion plan, gosh, that's a lot of money, aims to combat the motherhood tax and is expected to benefit approximately 180,000 families annually, of which I will be one.
That is so awesome. Yes, this directly affects you.
Me.
And as we know, the fastest growing group of homelessness amongst Australians
is
women over the age of 50. So this is going to help that just a bit, which is fantastic news. As always, wish it was already done, but I'm so, so stoked that this is actually happening now. Great news. Lozzie, last week I asked you to come into this episode off the back of something I saw in a Bluey episode that looked at something when kids are told or think that they're not good at something and so they just never do it again in their adult life.
Okay, I thought about this because I remember you said last time and I was there's no way I could think of something on the spot. Okay, one thing that I was told that I wasn't good at and instantly stopped was when I was younger, and I'm glad to say it wasn't from my parents. It was from school. Is that what you asked originally? From school or from anywhere?
Yeah. Or it could have even been self-talk. Like you just try one thing, you don't like the way you did it, and so you're like, oh, I'm never doing that again because I'm embarrassed about how that turned out, for example.
Okay, so at school I was told that I was not good at cross country. Do you remember doing that?
Oh, yeah.
It was a horrible event. I never liked it anyway, so I was like, whatever. To be honest, I didn't really like running cross country. So I
wasn't not competitive in that way too, which I respect, whereas I was a competitive sports kid. Yeah.
I wasn't too devo about it, but in saying that, I've never done it since, and I actually never will. Yeah. I really will never do that. So that's one thing I could think of. I couldn't think of anything that was more like complex and like inflicted any
And you haven't
trauma.
Really put a positive spin on it because you're saying that you still will never do it. Like you're not going to try.
Nah, I don't even want to do it.
This exercise is quite null and void.
Well, it's really hard though because I also feel like I'm one of those personalities that unfortunately when people say I can't do something, it makes me more competitive to do it.
Yes,
like
I almost go giving opposite. Up then and there.
Yeah.
That's what I love about you. It's actually, it sounds egotistical, but I actually posit that it's the opposite because I reckon there's been things like certain sports, because I was quite sporty. If there was a sport that I wasn't as good at, I would just never do it again because I reckon that was quite egotistical of me being like, oh, that wasn't something that people are going to be impressed by my skills in. I'm just going to give up. This is embarrassing. You're doing the opposite of being like, well, I'll get good at it. Watch me.
Yeah, or even if I don't get good at it, I'm kind of like, well, I'm better
you're
than
comfortable.
You who's not doing it. So yes. I'm already
you're
one
comfortable.
Up.
Yeah, that's good.
What was
Mine
yours?
Is, I'll never forget, in like year eight art class, we were doing pottery and I just kept re-fucking shaping this clay into a million different iterations. By the time it went into the kiln, I was like, God, I don't want my name on that. Take the initials off, rub those initials off. And I remember just being mortified around my arty friends that I just couldn't make something good out of clay. It was so embarrassing. But this weekend, I am doing a weaving workshop. So, like, I don't know if you've seen this sort of trend among art, and it's like weaved pieces of artworks. There's someone on Instagram called J.Elborn, and it's sort of spelled in the way of Melbourne. And she does these really cool, like, it's like coloured weavings, and they're really cool.
Yes, I have seen it.
I can't remember who the actual artist is that we're doing it with this weekend, which I feel bad about because she's obviously local and I wish I could shout her out, but I will shout her out next week. So I grew up sort of telling myself that because I wasn't good at drawing and art, that I wasn't creative, which I've noticed later in life is not true. I love decorating spaces. I love sourcing old art and things like that. And so I feel like I'm exercising a part of my skill set that I thought I didn't have this weekend. I could come back here really embarrassed next week.
You'll be fine.
With a piece of weaving that looks terrible. So stay tuned.
Who cares? I'd still hang it in my house because it'd be better than what I could do. So, you know, re-gift it to me if you don't like it. I actually just thought of something as you were talking. One thing I've never done, because something that my dad said to me when I was younger, was I've never ever changed a tire on my car.
That's a great one. That is a fantastic example. Like, and it very feeds
this is
much
the example.
Into the podcast.
Yeah. Yes, that you were after. Because growing up, my dad was very much like, oh, that's a man's job. So
isn't
I remember.
That fascinating.
Yeah. I remember actually I broke down many years ago. I would have been young. Or I had a flat tire or something. I knew it was going flat because I could hear that boom, 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 boom noise as I was driving. And I was like, oh, this can't be good.
This feels
and
very
so instead
dangerous.
Of it, instead of changing it myself, I just went to a servo and I waited for some guy to fill up his car. And then I was like, excuse me, could you please change my tire? And he was like, yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, he did it.
Yeah.
But I've never actually done it. And I could do it myself. I should probably just learn.
That's a fantastic example. I've never changed a tire either.
No.
That's such a good example because I've just never felt like I had the need. Someone else could always do it. Or you know,
exactly.
When you got your service, they'd do it. But that is a
But I should learn
example.
To do it because it's very much skewed, right, towards being something that a man would typically do.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
oh,
I reckon
job.
I could actually just do that myself.
And we're independent women, as Destiny's Child told us. So we can do it. Great example.
There you go.
I didn't actually, you started that week, let's be honest, and you finished.
Yeah. I came
so strong.
Yes.
So what are we talking about today? A social media post about mums working from home and running their own business that shocked Loz, plus to freelance again or to job hunt. I am in a bit of a pickle where I don't really know what my return to proper work is going to look like. I, as you know, returned to work at about 6 months postpartum. It felt too early. Posey wasn't sleeping. So I pulled it back for the last, say, 5 months to only work on Ready or Not. And I haven't been doing much outside work at all during that time. But come April, we need more income. I'm going back to some sort of work. Do I go the 3 day a week stable job route and then work on Ready or Not outside of that? Do I freelance? I'm not sure. I'm going to be asking you all of my questions for if I choose to apply for jobs as a mum who's really only been freelancing these last 3 years and actually feels less confident than she should as someone who has a podcast about making work as a mum. Take it away, my friend.
Mums, if you are working from home and or running your own business, these stats will shock you. I was sent an Instagram post by Her Business Collective recently, not by one people, by multiple people. So
one
the
people
knew. The people, not by one people. This is where my brain's at, honestly. I can't. Like, why am I having a third kid? On that, for all those women that are enduring their third pregnancy, I just want to say something happens to your mind, like the brain capacity.
Oh, God, if I went for a third, I don't know what would happen because it's already pretty dire over here.
The first two, quite honestly, I mean, I know this is arrogant, but I felt sharp as a tack. Like nothing missed a beat.
You have been sharp.
Nothing. I've been sharp until this one, and it's like, I don't know what's happened to me. I said to someone the other day, stop breathing down my throat at work.
Oh, that's good.
Oh,
what's the saying actually?
Like,
I actually can't remember.
Stop breathing down my neck.
Here I'm like, laughing. I was pretending I got it. So see what's happening to
like,
my two kids.
There's a big difference, Loz, between mouth to mouth and breathing down your neck. Yeah. I was like.
Were you telling someone off just quickly? Because I love that.
Yeah, I said it as a joke. Like they said something. Oh, yeah. I said, stop breathing down my throat. Yeah. Like, you know, slightly passive aggressively. And they're like,
I love that. I want to see passag laws come out more often.
Wow. Well, that's not quite right.
Just you wait.
Anyway, I got sent this by multiple people and immediately I just knew I had to talk about it. Talking about something that really puts the mental and physical load of working mums into perspective. Working from home mothers carry 73% more workload compared to women without kids. That is not just a number. It's a reality check. Let's break this down. Paid work, the level playing field. Both groups work roughly 35 hours a week in paid roles. So this can be the part that makes us feel like we're doing okay, but it's only part of the story. Paid work is obviously just one slice of the pie. Next part is the unpaid work, so the hidden load. Mothers add on an additional, this actually astounded me, 40 hours a week of unpaid work. So housework, meal prep, laundry, cleaning up after tiny tornadoes. It's a second full-time job.
Do you resonate with that just quickly? Do you reckon you do 40 hours a week of unpaid work at home?
Well, yeah. If you take into consideration the times when I'm solo parenting as well, which I would almost
you
consider.
You do a lot, actually.
I do. True. I do a lot. Yeah. Which I would consider that paid work because it's not like a shared workload.
You mean unpaid work?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. This is going to get.
This is our best episode halfway to date. I'm calling it early. I'm also getting very red in the studio. Look how red I am. I'm boiling.
You're hot. Yeah. I would say I would do close to that.
Yeah, well, yeah, Rye travels a lot for work, so that's very quick to add up to solo parenting hours.
Yeah, but also...
and unpaid work.
On the days that I'm in the office, I get home, so I do childcare drop-off. I do childcare pick-up. I do meal prep, so lunchbox in the morning. I often do a load of washing. I'll come back, I'll unpack the dishwasher, make the kids dinner, I'll reframe and reset for the next day. By the time I've actually done everything, and of course Ryan does components of it when he can, but by the time I've actually done everything, it's 9 p.m.
So that's 4 hours.
Yes, right, 4 hours plus the hour in the morning. So that's 5 per day on work days, which is.
Yeah. So that's 25 hours all day a week Wednesday. And then it's the weekend. So you would get bloody close to it. Oh.
You're working overtime. So it's invisible labor. There's no applause. There's no paychecks. It's just bloody endless to-do list. The next one, childcare, the constant demand. So on average, mothers spend 24.5 hours a week on childcare. This includes feeding, bathing, school drop-offs, bedtime routines, and everything in between. Women without kids don't have this extra load. We're not saying, you know, we're superior. I'm just saying that's a given. If you don't have children, you're not doing that. It's not about blaming or shaming. It's just a reminder that we're working a totally different shift. Leisure time. This is the big gap. Here is the kicker. Women without children enjoy 28 hours more leisure time every week.
Oh, heaven.
Yep. So that's time for reading, exercise, Netflix, binges, or doing absolutely nothing. That's 4 hours a
day. Oh, that's when you're doing the 5 to 9 shift. That's exactly when.
Exactly. So for moms, those hours are gobbled up by caregiving and household responsibilities. I want to just take a pause on this little thing because a girlfriend of mine who doesn't have children said to me recently, like, oh, you know, I'm so fucking tired. I'm exhausted, blah, 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 blah. And I get it, by the way. Like everyone is entitled to feel exhausted.
Yeah. And we've been there. Like pre-kids, we would have had the same limits.
Oh my gosh, 100%. But the one thing that I will say is different between people with kids and without is that when you don't have kids, you are allowed to have a sleep in.
Yes.
Or you're allowed to do something
on the couch when you get home.
Yeah. Or you're allowed to do something that could, fill your cup in hours that suit you. The difference is when you have children, if you're exhausted, tired, hungover, what it might be, you aren't granted that, pleasure in life. Unfortunately,
you're just like hoping they nap well.
You have to crack on and then it kind of becomes this like bank of tiredness.
Oh,
it's
like
you can never fully get it back.
Not for 7 years, they say. Not for 7 bloody years do you get your sleep back after your last children is born.
Exhausting. Anyway, I just wanted to touch on that. What does this mean for mums? So this isn't just about the numbers. It's about why you might feel like you're stretched so thin. This is why I liked this article and probably why people sent it to me. It's all very good and well for us to be harping on about how hard it is. But, I mean, obviously there's many joyous parts and we always want to frame it in a positive light. But it also is very validating because these are stats. It's not just someone saying, oh, yeah, it's been
I'm a bit
hard.
Tired and this is a bit hard. A bit tired. Yeah, as you said, that's your absolutely golden nugget of every episode is bringing context to
the
how we
stats.
All feel.
Yeah, and it explains a lot about the pressure that working mums do feel. So you're not failing if you're not hitting every career milestone as fast as someone without kids. You're also not lazy if you skip the gym or you don't finish that online course you signed up for. How many times have we all done it? Like, we've got the best intentions.
It's literally like you're speaking to my soul right now. You're actually making me feel better.
Yeah, and you're also not behind if your side hustle isn't booming, because realistically, when are you supposed to have the bloody time?
Did you write these 3 points out for me? You're going to make me cry. You're making me feel better about myself.
It's true. So I
need this reminder.
We do. And we get all these DMs from women like with questions saying, oh, you know, oh, my business is taking a lot longer than I anticipated. Yeah, girlfriend, mate, you got kids and you got other shit going on. I mean, I'm not saying that you might be more effective without kids. You'd probably be just as effective, but the difference is in the time management around it.
Yes, like, especially when they're super little.
Oh, God, yeah. So studies show that the imbalance affects women's mental health and career progression, but it's not just a problem for us individually. Obviously, it's a societal one. Flexible work policies can help close this gap. They're not always enough. Governments and workplaces need to acknowledge that unpaid work has real economic value. The biggest thing that stood out in this post is that as a collective, we all need to stop the comparison game. I do it all the time. I found myself doing it more recently, probably because it's at the start of the year. You set your intentions, your goals, even though I'm like, let's just create small, realistic ones. I mean, yeah, like everyone has big aspirations.
Drinking two glasses of water. How's that going, by the way?
Yeah, good.
Good girl. Are you getting more than two in?
I'm trying. I'm doing all right. But sometimes it feels like you compare yourself to others, or you see all this stuff on Instagram. There's like these people killing it. Like, I don't know about you, but at the moment I'm getting absolutely slammed with, and I've probably clicked on it once or twice, like I'm not going to lie, I'm getting spammed with work from home and make thousands per week.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a bit of that come up. Yeah. I'm tempted.
But I think we also need to remember your pace is your pace. You're running a marathon, not a sprint. Everyone just needs to chill out. And I guarantee you, even those little things that pop up, like, you know, sell these products or be an online sales master, mate, in order for you to be making thousands per week, you still got to invest the time. And the time is what a lot of people are struggling to find.
So don't fall for these ads that are coming up.
Is good enough, quite
honestly. It's good enough. That's a great way to start the year. You are good enough. What you're doing is good enough. A nice reminder of that too is that while Ready or Not is growing and it's amazing and we're so excited, the amount of people that come to me and they go, you are exploding. Like that, your podcast is getting so big. What you and Loz are doing is so huge. Like you're growing so quickly. And I'm like, look, yeah, we are. And it's great. But things always look better on the outside than they are on the inside. So as you say, stop comparing to everyone around you because they're probably running a different race internally than they are externally. I'm so hard on myself. I want this show to grow three times the size that it's growing currently. And that's a good reality check to go, what you're doing is pretty good. Stay in your lane.
Exactly right. And for those mums that needed to hear some stats that are working, that are thinking to themselves, far out, this is a hard slog. Mate, it is. Like, it actually is, but everyone's in it together. And the pace that you're working at is fine for you. Like, don't, I mean, it's good to aspire to be other people or like aspire for like a higher goal or whatever. But when you're putting all your time and energy into it, it's fucking exhausting. You just got to run your own race. Yeah, it's so tiring.
Do less.
It really resonated with me at the moment because I'm like, this is the first time I've seen those type of stats where it's like 73% more workload compared to women without kids. That's a huge difference.
And it's, again, as you say, it's not to compare to the people without kids. It's thinking of your prior self almost and being annoyed that you don't have the same capabilities, which is exactly what you're saying, because how are you expected to operate in the way that you used to when you've got 73% extra workload on you?
No.
It is wild. I feel like that perfectly segues into what I'm talking about with you today, Lozzie, and that's that I'm at an interesting juncture where from April I'm going to ramp up work again. Posey will start the same 3 days of daycare that Ray has from April, and I will be working on Ready or Not, but unfortunately it's not enough to pay for a salary, basically. It's not 4 days a week worth of money. So I need to find more work. I could just go back to freelancing. So as I said earlier, I don't know if I said it in this conversation. I can't even remember because my brain doesn't work sometimes. But basically I did return to work at about 6 months postpartum with Posey, took on a pretty intense freelance project. After that, decided I would only work on Ready or Not until this coming April. So I could go back to freelancing like I did after Posey and after Ray in a more pronounced way, or I could work, or I could look at getting a 3-day-a-week job that is mostly working from home. I'm willing to commute once or twice a week, but not more than that. Otherwise, I'll just be in the car all the time and it will be incredibly stressful. And I'm starting to see the allure of what you're doing, I guess, of having an income, being on a salary, not having these project-specific bursts of being really busy for 10 weeks here and then that podcast or that project or whatever I'm working on producing, being out in the world and then, you know, finding the next one to work on, of having reliability, of having set hours, all of those things. So I have a few questions for you. One of the first things is, how would you update your resume if you were me? So obviously I have my experience pre-kids. How am I talking about my parental leave, sort of not gap because I have been freelancing, but how do I put my freelance work, my Ready or Not work, and my parenting unpaid work on my resume and update my resume first off?
I've done a whole episode of this on Ask Ready or Not. There's so many different ways you can do it. It depends on your comfort levels. So if you feel comfortable putting your parental leave gap on your resume, go for it. Personally, I don't put it on there because I feel like I'm working anyway. And I just want to say, if you're like, oh, you kind of have to. No, you don't. So 1 year of paid parental leave or government leave is part of an employment conversation across Australia wide. For example, it is expected that your job still remains if you have a job at the commencement of that period, right? So technically you're still employed.
Yeah.
You're still employed. True. Yeah. So you don't have to do anything. You can say, I'm still working there, because guess what? You are. You may not physically be in the office, sure, but you still have an employment contract and you're still working there, and the skills that you had before you left are still relevant. Or other things that you can do. If you've been freelancing, I would just put all your freelancing work on there as per. If you want to call out the skills that you've learned within parenthood, which are many, so there's like negotiation, time management, event planning, social media management, content management of your beautiful child, communication skills, anything that you think is relevant to the job that you're applying for, go for it. Adds a bit of humor to your resume too. Like, it's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
I do think, God, this is so controversial. I would love to say as a society, there is no bias in the resume process, but I still think there is. And the reason why I'm often not keen to include parental leave is because I do think it can put your resume, I don't think it's doing a disservice to yourself, but I think it can. Mm. Yeah. So my advice would be, unless you're really passionate about it and it's something that you want to discuss in the interview, leave it out. Completely.
I guess the unique thing for me is that I have a podcast all around parenting and making work work. So,
but that is work.
Yeah.
I would always.
No, but I mean, like, it's probably obvious that I've had parental leave breaks, is what I'm saying, because why else would I be working on this podcast? You know what I mean?
But how is it a parental leave break? You're still working.
True. That's a very good point. So, would you just, for the period that I've freelanced, would you just put down freelance here, the clients included? And then would you put Ready or Not in the resume, or would you keep that out?
Yeah, I'd be like business owner or self-employed. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then all the roles that you do within that.
And then how do you deal with the ego of them looking at that and being like, well, maybe she isn't that good at what she does because it's not bringing her in a full-time salary? How do you mitigate, firstly, just sort of the inward turmoil around that? And also, do you think that outwardly looks bad?
No.
So that's just an inner confidence thing that I need to work on.
100%. I think anyone that's going to interview you has read your resume and is not thinking the thoughts of, otherwise they wouldn't be interviewing you, quite frankly. If they thought that way, they wouldn't even push you through to a process, which means it's not the right organization for you and you're not the right employee for them. If they're interviewing you, naturally, they're going to ask you about your experience. And I think personally, the business owner founder journey is so much more difficult than working for an organization because of the things that you have to do around it. Like you've got experience in setting up a business, in business admin, in understanding your finances, in creating a social media account, in posting, in meta campaigns, like all of that stuff, to be honest, you wouldn't necessarily get at a business because you'd be working and focusing on one specific area. Mm. So you've got this breadth of knowledge that you could bring to a new organization that you otherwise wouldn't have had.
That's
so
great.
I would consider
point.
It like any other job.
My next thing is you made me very well aware because you've talked about it so many times, but I actually forgot. I was only looking for part-time jobs when I started my search. And then I was like,
I would never look for part-time jobs.
What
never.
Has Loz been telling you for years, even before this podcast, is that you should look at full-time jobs too. There's two unique things. Obviously, my dream is 3 days, not 4 days of work for someone else so that then I can still dedicate 1 day a week to Ready or Not. First question is, if I'm looking for 3 days of work a week, how would I approach that? Say I get an interview, it goes well. How are you approaching it? What stage do you say three? Because three is quite different to four in terms of requesting. So I know that's a bit of a tricky one. And also as someone that lives an hour out of the city, when am I bringing up that of those 3 days, I'd want to work from home at least one of them?
Okay. When you're searching for a job, there's got to be give and takes. There's got to be your negotiables and your non-negotiables. So for example, you were willing and able to negotiate a 5-day role to a 3-day role. What would you give on your side? Would you potentially say, okay, I've gotten what I want in terms of, I really like the role. I'm glad that we've like revised the PD, or maybe you're in a job share situation and I'm doing 3 days. I'm happy to then give something back to the organization and go in 2 days a week. Like I would kind of frame it as to a bit of give and take.
A bit of negotiation.
You got to have flex, particularly if they're not advertising that. So if you said, I only want 3 days and I only want to go in one, they're going to be a bit like, whoa, like.
Yeah. Yes.
The role is a 5-day a week role. Mm. We've said it's a hybrid role, which assumes 2 days in the office. Now you're saying it's part-time and 1 day. I feel like that could be a bit too forward. So think about what's negotiable and what's not.
Just on that quickly, say I landed this role or was in negotiations for this role and it was 3 days a week and I was going into the office 2 days a week. Have you ever negotiated, say, longer days on those 2 days or to make the hours, I guess, closer to 4 days? I don't know. I'm just thinking of different ways that you can get closer to those 4-day hours because do you think it's a real deterrent to apply for a 5-day a week job but request 3 days, not four?
It depends on the job. It depends on the people that you're interviewing with. It depends on your ability to get stuff done, your experience. If you're someone that's applying for a role that's slightly more junior than what you've done before, like a podcast editor, right? And you're like, okay, look, this role's 5 days. I'm happy with a wage of 90K. It's more junior than what I've done before. And I know that I could do it in 3 days because you don't have to train me. I know what I'm doing. I've used the systems. I can do it in 3 days. Like,
yeah. Fine. That's a really good point.
But I would also say to you, don't forget that you are doing a full-time role in 3 days. So there is going to have to be some kind of conversation around boundary setting from the beginning of your non-work days. Like, yes, the view is you need to complete your work within those 3 days. See how it's that give and take? It's a really tricky one.
It's also tricky because I'm so privy to the fact that sometimes things would fall on the 2 days that I'm not working. How do you set boundaries? Like, I'm so hopeless with that. What would you put in place? Like, I don't want work life to bleed into mum life too much, but would I say, for example, on that fourth day that I can work from 4 to 6 on that day as a catch up 2 hours or something like that? I don't know, because Hayden gets home from work then. I mean, I'd include them in my negotiation in my salary, but is that something that you potentially look at as opposed to going stone cold on 3 days? Would you say on a fourth day, I'm happy to do 2 hours of anything that sort of needs wrapping up? Or do you think I'm getting too complicated?
I think you're getting too complicated. I wouldn't commit myself to any time requirements. I would say, look, when I can, I'll sporadically check my emails. And if there's anything urgent, I'll try to make myself available. But at the moment, the days that I would prefer to work are 3 days per week. I can be flexible with what those days are to make sure that we're, you know, team. If there's a team anchor day, obviously I'll make sure that I'm available for that. It's really important. You know, there has to be some form of give and take. But if you're 3 days and that's your staunch 3 days of work, you got to stick to 3 days. Otherwise, why aren't you applying for 5-day, like why aren't you applying for full-time roles and doing full-time and just working till midnight every night? Like
an
extra 40% pay.
So you would never mention at the start that you're looking for a 3-day-a-week role when you're bringing it up?
3 days is very different to 4 days as well.
That's what's worrying me.
It depends what your flex is. I would usually, personally, I would always look for full-time roles. And then I would cross that bridge when and if it comes. And yeah. If it doesn't come, then you need to reevaluate and be like, do you know what? What I'm asking for is not suiting the market. Whereas the market can't meet me where I'm at, so I'm going to have to go back and reevaluate what I want, what I need, what I can do, what I can commit to, childcare, et cetera. Like, you're going to have to learn that for yourself. I'm not applying for roles at the moment, so I don't know what the job market is like.
It'll be really interesting to say.
Honestly, yeah. But I never think there is any harm in applying for a full-time role, waiting until you're the preferred candidate or like very close to contract offer and saying, I would like this role to be 3 days a week or 4 days a week or whatever it might look like. This is my proposal. How can we facilitate this? What can we do to make this work? I'm obviously flexible, but
why do I feel sneaky? Like, why does that make me feel sneaky? I can't help it. Like, the idea of going through the interview process and then asking for 3 days a week, it's ridiculous, and I know it shouldn't. And after everything I've learned, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it makes me feel like I've tricked them into letting me through to this stage, and now I'm telling them something they don't want to hear. How do I get through that?
Every company is always going to say they want the right person for the role. I'd say 90% of companies are going to say it's all about cultural fit. We want somebody that fits.
And on that too, like if I went back to CA, they would have given me the same role I had, but at 3 days a week. So like it does exist, and they can make those allowances, obviously.
Of course they can. It's just whether or not that's going to fit their broader strategic goals, their key performance indicators, all that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of conversations that would need to happen around it. But I have also been on the other side of trying to hire people for the role, and it's so difficult. I think this is what, if you haven't been in a situation where you've had to hire someone, you may not understand how truly difficult it is to find the right person for the role. It is really hard. And when you do find the right person that you're like, oh, their skills align really nicely with the team, their personality is going to fit in, there's not going to be any teething issues. Like, when you find the right person, often you think to yourself, if they negotiate, if they're like not happy with the salary, or if they are not happy with the working hours or the days, what can I do to facilitate this? Because you've most likely gone through like 4 rounds, you've met with like 20 people, and you're already invested, and you're like, this is going to work best for my environment.
Yeah.
It is give and take. You're not always going to get what you want. If you said, hey, I want $200,000 at 3 days a week, and I'm only working these days, to be honest, it's so rigid that somebody's going to turn around to you and say, you're the right fit, you've got the right skills and the right attributes, but we can't facilitate that.
Yeah.
Because we can't set a standard.
We have to get a bit of a stance check of how, like, I've got to use this as a teething process and figure it out as I go, sort of almost.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's so many different ways that you can propose it. You can say, I love this role. Here's a value that I could add. Would you be open to a trial period or a probation period of 3 months at 3 days per week, where
that's
every week I have a check-in with my manager and we see where I'm at and my workload and how I'm benefiting the business? Is that something that you would consider? If you're framing it in a way that's beneficial to the business, they are more likely to say yes. If you're just like, I want A, B, C, D, they're probably going to turn around and be like, thanks, but no thanks.
No thanks. That's a really good point. I have two more questions for you. Say I am in negotiation for a role that is, they've said, yes, you can work 3 days a week, but it seems like nothing's come off the PD. Would you be negotiating pay at 4 days a week or 5 days a week if you're doing this same amount that's on the PD or that's expected of the role, but in 3 days?
Oh, that's a really hard one.
That feels different to me, going like 3 and 4 feels very different in that respect to me.
Yeah. I believe you've got more bargaining power with 4 if the role's not changing. You could say, could we try a condensed week? Could I be paid for a 9-day fortnight and work 4 days? I think you've got more bargaining power. As a societal frame of full-time and part-time, there is a very, very big difference between 5 days and 3 days.
Huge.
So 3 days.
There's 4 sort of right in the middle, obviously, like literally it is. But from a work point of view, it's a big difference.
Yeah. So 3 days traditionally is seen, or anything less, is seen as part-time. And your duties usually for 3 days will get stripped back. 4 days is seen as I would say 5 days in four with no additional pay.
I couldn't agree more. Well, unless like the 4 day work week is based off the fact that everyone's doing their 5 days of work in four. So it's a very different conversation to doing three. I agree. Like it would be very rare for something to not drop off your PD if you were taking the role as a 3 day a week role.
That absolutely.
Was what's my word? Was promoted as a 5 day a week role.
Yeah. And the thing that I would say about and why I'm so passionate about applying for, particularly if you do want 4 days, applying for full-time role in 4 days is you're just far more likely to get it. As in, if you're the right candidate with the right skills, the right fit, the right culture, tick boxes that they need, if you're through to the final interview and you're saying, hey, I would really love to work 5 days in four. Could we look at a condensed week? Could we look at a 9 day fortnight? In this day and age, if it's a larger organization, I need to preface it by saying that because a lot of smaller organizations just might not have the budget or they might require you to be in more frequently. That's just the realities of.
And obviously, like different industries, you know, some people might be packing, literally need to physically be in somewhere packing.
If you're in a warehouse,
or whatever.
100%. There's all these considerations.
Yeah.
But if you are applying for a larger workplace, I mean, I just think you've got more power.
I've got to test the waters and just see what happens and even see if it's possible to find the sort of role I want in 3 days a week. So it'll be interesting. My last question for you before we wrap up, I'm also going to do something while I'm at the start of this process and there's a little bit less pressure because I sort of want a job by April and it's currently still January. So I figure what I'm going to start with is a little bit more aspirational and go from there and be realistic that I might not find it. I've been thinking of pitching myself to different media organizations that I know, talking about my very specific skill set in like podcasting, in video production, in writing, and seeing just where that lands. I've got a few different contacts in different media organizations. I'm sure you can think of one that's sort of at the top of my mind that I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
If I was knowing that this, you know, is unlikely to happen, but putting the feelers out, how are you sending an email to an editor of, say, some sort of media organization saying, it would be my dream to work for you. These are my skills. These are the areas that I think I could help. Do you think there's any way that we could work together? How are you putting that together?
I would keep it low fluff, direct to the point, and attach a resume.
Yeah. And don't say, I know this is unlikely, like I would. Nah, I know that no role exists, but, and like downplay myself. Just say, I'd really like to work at your organization. This is sort of the parameters of my life. These are my skills. If there's anything that comes up.
I don't think you need to put too much into the parameters of your life. Ask for what you're looking for. So I am looking for freelance opportunities to work within your organization. Here is my skill set. This is the value that I could add. I've noticed that you had a job offering for this. It looks like you might need help on a couple of projects. I am well versed in X, Y, Z. Anything that aligns with stuff that you feel like is an obvious gap for them. Like if they're recruiting for a heap of roles for, I don't know, heads of product or something, the assumption is like they need product people in their organization, even from a freelance perspective. Like look at what the job openings are. And then I would just sign off, hope to hear from you. I wouldn't say I've always dreamt of working for. I would love to work for an organization like yours and believe that my skill set fits perfectly with what you may be looking for. Thanks.
Yeah. Great. That's a great way to end it. I love the lack of fluff because I am the fluffiest human that I know. Sign us off, my friend. Great to see your face again. Thanks for your advice.
If you have loved listening to today's episode, please leave us a review. I know we harp on about it all the time, but every review does actually count.
And please do it. If you listen every week and you haven't yet, please write us a review. We'd be so grateful.
Yeah, we actually do love reading them. And follow us on RadioNot.pod. Drop us a little, you know, line, say hello, introduce yourself. And if you have a burning question for Ask Radio Not, please submit it. Sometimes I feel like I answer some questions that are asked and others that people just randomly happen to drop into conversation. I'm like, oh, that's so relevant. Like we should be talking about that. But if you've got a specific one, send it in. I would love
to research
it. And
just on that, actually, on the highlights, like the stories that live permanently on the Instagram page, there is one called Ask Loz. So you can either DM us and that's fine. Otherwise, you can add it to the Ask Loz highlights reel. Oh, not highlights reel, just the highlight on the page. If you go to that, there's a question box where you can submit questions.
Beautiful. See you next week.